Greetings, one and all. You are the audience we've been waiting for. And you may have heard about the news. But stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, and we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and I guess it'll be the events of the last couple weeks. Again, I apologize. Had to take last Sunday off. I know I said it was technical difficulties. Technically, what it was is that I was traumatized from having been in St. Louis during the riots. And as you can tell, my extremely attractive audio engineer, definitely ready to go here. I'm going to have to restrain her, put some reins on her, rein her in, for crying out loud. So I'm over my trauma from being in St. Louis and witnessing all of that, and Thanksgiving and all that. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We had a great Thanksgiving. I got to give a Bible study to my friends and their kids, all about whatever happened to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then I worked in the gospel and the Thanksgiving and all that. It was really cool. So we've been having a good time here just dying to get back with you people so that we can do inform you, hopefully, and entertain you, possibly even enlighten you, and more than likely offend you at least once. But just bear with us. It'll be worth it. And so the studio here in the bowels of the McBurney compound, you may notice it's a little more echoey than normal because we've been moving stuff out of the studio and getting things ready for possibly fleeing the suburbs. Yeah, possibly. We're going to try to flee the suburbs, get out there into the country. My daughters, Nicole and Zoe and Alexis, they came and said they wanted goats and chickens. And so I fired off an email to the HOA, and they said absolutely no goats and certainly no chickens. I didn't even want to ask them about pigs. So given the HOA's position on this, we are going to try to sell our house in the suburbs and move out into the country where we can go out in the backyard and shoot our guns, feed our chickens. That's what we're going to do. Yeah, well, no. You don't have to shoot guns. You can just feed the chickens. I'll shoot the guns. You don't have to feel any pressure in that regard. So that's the plan around here. So please forgive the lack of audio integrity here in the Worldview Studios. Do we want to go right to the news? I really don't have anything else going on in my life. It's pretty boring. Moving furniture, painting, caulking, spackling, painting, and all that. So let's move right into the news of the day. We're going to go immediately to the bad government file, and for that, we go to Canada. The Independent reports that doctors in Canada will begin prescribing heroin to heroin addicts starting this week. Yes, you heard that right. They're going to, according to the Independent report, doctors in Canada have been given the clearance to prescribe medical-grade heroin for individuals who have not responded to more conventional treatments for heroin addiction. So they're going to give heroin addicts who can't get off heroin, they didn't respond to methadone, they didn't respond to a slap across the face and being told to get their act together. And so the Canadian doctors and the Canadian Health Canada, as a matter of fact, in their wisdom, are going to begin prescribing heroin to the heroin addicts. I'm not sure how they get off the heroin.
It's the same with cigarettes.
The same with cigarettes?
The e-cigarettes.
The e-cig? You're not on board with the e-cig? You're right. It doesn't work very well. Yeah. Seems like it works for a little while.
It gives you nicotine.
But the fact is, you're still hooked on nicotine. So, I guess, so these doctors in Canada, well, anyway, the people grabbing for an e-cig and trying to get off Marlboros, they're not credentialed medical professionals. so you could cut them some slack. These are medical doctors and Health Canada, which is their government-run healthcare system. So they're going to, the federal conservative government there in Canada has maintained that it's opposed to doctors prescribing heroin to drug users. But keep in mind, being conservative ain't what it used to be. Prescription heroin is already widely available across the UK as a treatment for heroin addicts. As redundant and preposterous as that sounds. And the UK, as you know, is run by the Tories right now, which is their alleged version of a conservative government. So being conservative just ain't what it used to be. And, being a heroin addict in Canada, I mean, what would stop a heroin addict from going, seeking treatment, failing, and then getting medical-grade heroin for free? It's state-run health care. They get everything allegedly for free. Anyway, that's from the Bad Government and True Irony file. Heroin for the heroin. Let's treat the heroin addicts with heroin. All right, now let's go to the politics file. The big news over the past few weeks has been the federal amnesty that's been declared by our president, Barry Ho, and his Ho administration has decided to... Well, I heard that he signed an executive order to legalize up to 5 million heretofore illegal immigrants. Well, WorldNet Daily reports that the National Archives and Records Administration says that no such executive order was ever signed or filed. No. Now, Barry did sign some executive orders in Las Vegas the day after he announced his pledge to fulfill his plan to defer deportations and grant work permits for up to 5 million illegal aliens. But what he signed were just two presidential memoranda. One was a presidential proclamation creating a White House task force on new Americans. And the other was instructing the Secretaries of State and Homeland Security to consult with various entities to reduce costs and improve services in issuing immigrant and non-immigrant visas. That's all. He didn't actually sign an order that changed the law and did all these things that everybody's freaking out about. He just said that's what he's going to do. And then the whole world just acted as if it had happened. Which that, you know what? That buttresses my long-made point that all of the laws and the statutes and the constitutions and all the thousands of law books, they can all be just cast aside when the hearts of the people turn away from what is right and good. And so the Republican Party and the National Chamber of Commerce, and did I say the Republican Party? And the unions and the Catholic Church and all of the giant information-based corporations, they all want to legalize illegal immigrants. And so all Barry had to do was create an environment in which they felt they could do it. It's very similar to what happened with the Roe v. Wade decision back in 1973. Roe v. Wade didn't legalize abortion. There was never a federal law legalizing abortion written in 1973. It just created the environment that gave the people who already wanted the right to kill inconvenient babies, it just gave them license to do it. And then they started doing it under the auspices of this, and it was only going to be for a small this, and only for rape and incest here, and only for the life of the mother here. And before you knew it, it was abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy, which is available in America right now. And you people are going to get the same thing for the illegal immigrants. He's going to legalize 40 million of them because he didn't have to sign anything. He's just giving opportunity to the selfishness of the masses as it exists right now. And just so you know, immigration is not a huge issue with me. I believe that if we would just get rid of the welfare state, we could have virtually free and unlimited immigration. As long as we check everyone at the border and make sure they're not a terrorist, I'm all for that. Well, I don't mind Mexicans coming here. Guatemalans, Hondurans, even the French. Maybe not the French. Well, we'll get to some of that later. But let's get out of politics. Let's go to the strange religion file. This is from The Spectator. Hamilton, Ontario. Last Monday, a woman pleaded guilty to failing to notify police or the coroner that her husband had died. Her husband died in her house, and she didn't call anyone. And she failed to report that he was sick and not being treated by a doctor, and, he died. The husband, who was a 52-year-old man, probably died around March 20th, according to medical examiners. And he had refused to go to the hospital because he believed God would cure him. And then he went into a coma and he died, which often happens to people who are waiting for God to heal them. They often die. And this fella did. Now, the wife, she left his body in bed and sealed up the room and all the vents with duct tape to protect her family and neighbors from the smell of the decomposing cadaver. And then, according to the Spectator report, for 6 months, she and other family members prayed for their dead husband and father to be resurrected. Now, since God let him die, he was waiting on God to heal him, you see, and God let him die, what made them think now that they could call on him for a resurrection? Once it starts smelling, wouldn't you start to think, well, maybe God's not, you know, God answers prayer. Sometimes the answer's no. That's what I would have thought. Anyway, so for 6 months, he decomposed and they prayed. And the body was only discovered when the sheriff arrived to evict the family because they had defaulted on their mortgage. Apparently, they were waiting for God to pay their mortgage as well. And again, the answer happened to be no this time. They've charged her with a relatively minor charge because she's so confused in her bad religion. I'm sorry, this is the strange religion file. I don't want to call it bad because it is kind of sad that someone could be. I mean, you sit and you read the Bible, and it's easy to get confused. People need a good teacher, I tell you what, because you can take things out of context. You can fail to rightly divide the Bible, and you start reading things that weren't intended for you, and you start thinking they were, and before you know it, you got a cadaver upstairs, and it's starting to smell. It is pretty sad. Now, the woman says she still believes strongly in resurrection, and she says there's been many documented cases of it around the world. I know of two, three that I'm aware of. Now, there's Jesus Christ, of course, that resurrection. Now, but Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. Lazarus stinketh. I think the old King James. Uh-huh. Jesus said he's not dead. They said, Lord, he's stiff, and so he was decomposing too. Anyway, Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, and then I believe Paul raised a fellow who fell through the roof after a marathon Bible study. But we don't know that he was dead. No, but Lazarus was stinketh-ing, so he was definitely dead. All right, but this woman, she probably has some charlatan teacher who took so much money from her that she couldn't afford to pay her mortgage, and he convinced her that her husband could be resurrected if she would just give more money to church, which she, apparently she did it because she didn't pay her mortgage. And it's just sad. That's the strange religion file. Yeah, so this goes to another long-made point that I've made over the years, is that 99.5% of all the people preaching in the pulpits are not qualified to be there, and they should be run out of town on a rail, frankly. All right, now, more Pope news this week. We like to keep up with what the Pope is doing, even though we're not Catholic. And if we were Catholic, we would have been excommunicated quite some time ago for all the stuff we've said about the Pope. But the Pope, he makes it into the war file this week. Pope Francis has now declared that equating Islam with violence was wrong, and he called on Muslim leaders to issue a global condemnation of terrorism to help dispel the stereotype. And that's what we heard from the Muslims. Silence. If I'd have had crickets, I would have played them right there. If we would have had sound effects. We had to pack up the sound effects. Yeah, they're in there with some of the kitchen utensils. Yeah, we don't have the sound effects. But you would have heard crickets because the Pope called on Islamic leaders last Sunday, and it's been a full week, And we're all still waiting for the leading mullahs to come out with their condemnation of violence. But it would be hard for them to do, because then they'd have to throw the Quran away, and then they'd have to cut off their own heads for desecrating their holy book. Now, you'll remember that Francis's predecessor, according to the Reuters report, Benedict, he said he believed that Islam espoused evil. So it looks like Francis is trying to apologize for Benedict, saying that he believed Islam was espoused violence. But of course, I remember Benedict immediately apologized and said everyone had misunderstood him, even though he was citing like 1,000 years of history. Do they go back 1,000 years? Yeah, they go back. So for 1,000 years, it's been fairly obvious to all of us what Islam espouses. But the Pope seems confused. Do I want to do any more of this? Let's do a quote from the Pope, because we want to give him his fair shake. He says, "You just can't say that Islam espouses violence. You just can't say that all Christians are fundamentalists." He says, "We have our share of fundamentalists. All religions have these little groups," he said. Is he insulting fundamentalists, the Pope? Now, I consider myself a fundamentalist. Yeah. But Christian fundamentalists are different from Muslim fundamentalists. Christian fundamentalists are good, because the fundamental teaching of Jesus was love God and love your neighbor as yourself. But the fundamentalists over there in Islam, well, they're fundamentals. I try and boil it down. It's kill the infidel wherever you find him. Trying to get over the guitar. Oh yeah, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, here in studio with my extremely attractive audio engineer. And I left out submit. One of the fundamentals of Islam is to submit to the will of Allah and the Quran and the local mullah and whatever guy wants to put you in a burqa and molest you. Well, that's what they do. It's a foul, vile, satanic religion. And in Christian love, what we need to do is we need to kill the Muslim extremists and evangelize the remaining people. You'd be amazed at how fast the Muslim women and children would throw their Qurans out once all the extremist men were killed in battle, as they should be in Christian love. So there's my solution to that minor world problem. Now we go to the Just a System file. That's right. If you thought we had a justice system, us, Europe, Western civilization, if you thought we had a justice system, you might have been right at some point in the distant past, but no longer. Now it's just a system. The European Court of Human Rights has ordered France to pay thousands of dollars to Somali pirates who attacked French ships. Yes, they say that their human rights were violated. The pirates were apprehended on the high seas by the French military, surprisingly enough, and they were taken back to France for trial. Aha! There's the first mistake. When you capture pirates on the high seas, they should not be taken anywhere for trial. They should be summarily executed and jettisoned over the side of the ship. I mean, that's the way civilization functioned for 4,000 years. But not now, because now we have lawyers. And lawyers need to make a living. So the court there, this is the European Court of Human Rights, said that French authorities were wrong to hold the pirates in custody for 48 hours after they had reached land. And they didn't bring them to a judge quickly enough. So France was ordered to pay several thousand dollars to each pirate. These are pirates, for crying out loud. They should be executed. They should be, if they had to pay anyone, it should be the surviving family members of the pirates. If there was any kind of just judgment. But no. Not in the modern justice system. They had to pay these pirates for, quote, moral damages, unquote. That's what the court declared, moral damage. And the French government was ordered to pay up to about 10 grand apiece to cover the legal costs of the pirates who filed the complaint for a violation of the... See, lawyers got to make a living too. And there's one thing lawyers are good at, and that's making sure that other lawyers and themselves make as much money as possible. And there's something you may not know about judges. They're just lawyers. That's right, they're lawyers. And they got a racket going, running one of the biggest criminal enterprises in the history of man is the modern just a system. And there's a perfect example of it. Not surprisingly, from the French. All right. Now, we've got more news of the French from the war file. A French jihadist who returned to France, facing a 7-year sentence in prison for going to Syria to fight with the Islamic State against the West. So again, your first mistake, anyone who goes to Syria to fight for ISIS, they should never be allowed to return anywhere. They should be summarily executed on the battlefield or as soon as they're caught. But this guy was allowed to return. 28-year-old Flavien Mereau received his sentence last week for traveling to Syria and joining radical Islamic fighters. Now, Mereau says he never actually engaged in battle, and everyone in the French courtroom looked at each other and said, yes, this sounds right. He is French. So there's little chance he actually engaged in battle. He said that he didn't fight, and he returned to France because he could not quit smoking. Now, according to this French jihadi, or I guess you'd call him a jihadi, nicotine is frowned upon by the Islamic State. Now, they will cut the head off a child and rape a woman, but if they catch you smoking, it's big trouble. And he said he really struggled with not smoking. He was forbidden by the... He even brought some Nicorette gum with him. Oh, and he was chewing the gum. They don't like gum chewing either. So he really had a hard time. And he had to... That's why he went back to France to pick up a pack of Goulets, because he just couldn't quit. I don't even know if they have e-cigs in Syria. I don't think they have electricity.
Well, it's got nicotine. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's nicotine. That's not even an option for this poor French, radical Islamists over there in the Maghreb, the Levant, have called for public bans on smoking wherever they have established themselves and raped and kidnapped and slaughtered innocent people. Hitler never smoked. He hated smoking. He hated people who ate meat, and he loved dogs. So there, for whatever that's worth. The French government believes up to 1,000 French citizens have joined various terrorist groups in the Iraq-Syria region. To date, there's no evidence that any of them have actually engaged in battle. Case in another young Frenchman, he had to go home. La Figaro newspaper reported a series of letters from one of these French jihadis. In the letter... The jihadi who ran away, he said, winter has arrived. It's begun to get really hard. I am fed up. They make me do all the washing and the cleaning. I am missing the comforts of life in France. I am so fed up. My iPod doesn't work anymore here. I have to come home. They want to send me to the front, but I told them I do not know how to fight. When this these are actual letters from a French jihadi. So anyway, anyone who's shaking in their boots over ISIS, I mean, let's not give them more credit than they're due. I mean, a good company of Marines could start in Raqqa and march all the way to Baghdad with some decent air support and supplies, and they could clean this whole mess up. I mean, these guys are not, this is not the next Third Reich or anything like that. I mean, at least not yet. I'm not saying it couldn't become something like that, which is why we need to nip it in the bud, and I'll refer you to my previous suggestion that we kill the radicals and we evangelize the rest. Now, wait a second. I need to get back to this Frenchman. One Frenchman went to the emir in his jihadi fighting group, and he explains that he wanted to leave, to return to France, because my iPod is not working and I'm tired of washing your dishes. He was beheaded. Beheaded. Yeah, he was beheaded. Yeah. Now, there's a group of lawyers in France, as you can well imagine. They're trying to persuade the French state to allow the jihadis to return. Why would they do that? Well, you already know. They want to defend them in court so that the government can pay them lots of money and they can... It's all a racket. And the lawyers don't really care if, let's say, a bus explodes in Paris, maybe, because that's really, they're not thinking about that. See, about 100 jihadists have returned to France from fighting with ISIS and others. Only 76 of them are in prison. So that means 24 Frenchies who went and fought for ISIS are loose. They're free. And while a Frenchman may not do very well with a rifle on the field of battle, just like anyone else, they can pull off a sneaky, low-rent terrorist attack. And if that does happen, I hope that the French government will go back to whatever lawyers defended him and make sure that the lawyers pay, although there's probably very little chance of that. All right. Now, quickly, let's shift gears from... Well, what would you call that? It's the war file, but it's not geopolitics. It's geo-relations, foreign relations. Well, it's just the war is what it is. Well, let's switch from the war to the economy, because a Russian oil tycoon said about 10 days ago that the new OPEC policy on crude oil production is designed to ensure a crash in the U.S. shale oil industry. So OPEC has set its sights on the American roughnecks up there in North Dakota and Colorado and other states where they are pumping oil out of the shale formations with all this high-tech fracking technology. And it's become a threat to the Saudis and the Russians. Don't think the Russians aren't involved in this. So OPEC is trying to craft a production policy that keeps the price of oil profitable for them, but makes it unprofitable for shale oil roughnecks out there in the Bakken and whatnot. This Russian tycoon says that the shale boom, he says, the shale boom is on par with the dot-com boom. It's a very similar thing to the dot-com boom. The strong players will rebound, the weak ones, they will vanish. Unquote. That's the Russian oil tycoon quoted in this story from The Economist. He says this is a major strike against the American market. So what's so funny about that? That was actual audio. You know how hard it was to get the audio of this dark, shadowy Russian oil tycoon with a cigarette in his hand, dark glasses, talking about how they're going to crush shale oil production? Anyways, my question is, can Americans apply better technology, true grit, hard work, all the things that made America great, and keep pumping shale oil? I mean, we've done similar things in the past. You remember the 80s when everyone thought Japan was going to surpass America and buy all of our houses, and we would all be renting from Japan within 10 years, everyone thought. Well, see how that worked out? Anyway, Americans, we are very resilient people. But being American ain't what it used to be. So I guess we'll see. This will be interesting to see if the Saudis can pull this off, because I've got another report here from the Telegraph, says that the Saudis, well, OPEC and Russia, basically they want to shut down shale oil production. But what they don't realize is that U.S. producers have already locked in higher prices through derivatives contracts through the end of 2015. And I've got quotes from a couple of folks out there in the shale oil fields who says we can produce down to $50 a barrel. Let's see you try that, OPEC. Let's see you go to 50. Let's dance. Other producers in the Bakken claim that they can be profitable at 42. Another Bakken producer in the most productive county out in North Dakota says they can be profitable at $28 a barrel. So, hey, OPEC. Hey, Russia. Bring it on. Let's dance. Let's take oil down to $28 a barrel and see who's standing at the end of the day. Is it going to be the emir, right, who won't let you smoke but he keeps a goat in his bedroom? Or will it be the Russian and their oligarch criminal enterprise that they've got running? Or will it be the genuine American roughneck out there in North Dakota in the Bakken? We'll see who's standing at the end of the day. Doug McBurney here. Glad to have you aboard this week. Oh, yeah, I love the free market. I'm ready to go head-to-head. Let's go. I like it. Hey, because America is still America, despite how lousy things have gotten. I mean, we produced a band like Tesla. That says something right there, right? Uh-oh, uh-oh. It's the dual lead guitar solo. Oh, I gotta back off. All right, we're back to talk. That's right. Whew. All right, I got to wipe the sweat off my brow after that one. Man, those guys rock. All right, now, America still is America, okay? Breitbart reports that Ferguson, Missouri residents, during the riots, Ferguson residents armed with AR-15 stood guard around a Conoco station and saved it from being burned after looters began wreaking havoc on the night of November 24th. The owner did not even have to board up the station's windows. Why? Well, the aforementioned guys with the AR-15s. People don't throw rocks through windows when a guy with an AR-15 is standing in front of it. It's amazing how that works. Americans with AR-15s. That's it, right? That's an answer to many of the problems, at least in the streets of Ferguson. Now, these folks with their AR-15s, they protected not only the building, but also citizens who pulled up to get gas. People were still getting gas at this Conoco station during the riots. That's a beautiful thing. Yeah, the owner, Doug Morello, says, quote, "We would have been burned to the ground many times over if it weren't for them. And they did not get paid to stand guard. They said they did it because the owner had employed many of them over the years and treats them with respect." By the way, the guy who owned the Conoco was a white guy, and the guys with the AR-15s, they happen to be black guys, just so you know. So there is hope for Western civilization. There is hope for America. But no thanks to the lawyers and the governing cowards who run the proctocracy that is working day and night to enslave all of us. Case in point, the prosecutors in Ferguson, Missouri, this is according to Breitbart, They do not plan to pursue perjury charges against witnesses in the Michael Brown case who changed or recanted their stories or whose testimony was clearly contradicted by the physical evidence. So the St. Louis County prosecutor, Robert McCulloch, says he will not pursue perjury charges. Witnesses did acknowledge that they had not been accurate after being confronted with physical evidence that contradicted their story. So are you familiar with the Ten Commandments, folks? I'm sure most of you are. But one of them says, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. A lot of people think the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not lie. But that's not what it says. That's not what the Ten Commandments say. The Ten Commandments say, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And that means you shall not commit perjury, which is what these people have done, violating one of the big ones, folks. But it doesn't really matter because the prosecutor is scared that his house will be burned down or that he will be shot or that his wife and kids will be kidnapped. He's terrorized. He's afraid. Let's see. Anything else? Oh, he did a big press release where he came out. This is the prosecutor. The district attorney there in St. Louis County did a big press conference where he announced he will not pursue perjury charges, and at the end he ended the press conference by calling for peace. That was a veiled way of saying, please don't burn my house down. Please leave my wife and children alone. I'm not gonna prosecute you obvious lying perjurers who have put the country on edge and led to the destruction of good portions of our community. I'm not going to pursue that. Please don't hurt me. So that's terrorism. All right? And now since my pastor, Bob Enyart, who sometimes lets me sit in on his show on Real Radio here in Denver on AM 670 KLT, the mighty blowtorch for the gospel, 50,000 watts as a matter of fact. Ever since my pastor on his radio show declared that Michael Brown's death looked like suicide by cop, well, there's been some controversy around those comments. He's upset some people. But I've managed to do a little bit of investigating on my own, and I've tried to look into as many local St. Louis news outlets as I can to try to find out what was going on with Michael Brown that would make him behave so irrationally with the cop. I mean, I know I'm a really tough guy, but when a guy with a gun tells me to stop, put my hands behind my back, sit down, lay flat on my face, I do whatever he says. All right? I'm not really that tough, actually. But, you know, I can be as belligerent as the next guy, and I have resisted arrest, okay? But not if I actually thought I was going to get shot. That's just irrational. Why did Michael Brown act so irrationally? Well, he had just robbed the store, so he obviously was perhaps concerned that he was going to go to jail. He could have run away. He could have done a bunch of things. So I looked into what's going on with Michael Brown's life. So Lewis Head is the man who's the media has reported that Lewis Head is Michael Brown's stepdad. Well, that's not true. Lewis Head is just the guy who was shacking up with Michael Brown's mom at the time and was currently producing children with her in order to collect welfare checks from the government. It's a well-known racket, okay? So that's what's going on. He's the guy who stood up on the car and said, burn this bleep down. You saw that, right? There's new video now before he jumped up on that car where he's actually talking to his friend saying, no, if I go up on that car, I'm going to start a riot. No, I don't think if I go up there, I'm going to start a riot. And then he goes up there and he starts a riot. He demands that Ferguson be burned down, and then it was burned down. Will the prosecutor, the St. Louis County prosecutor, McCulloch, do you think he'll pursue charges against Lewis Head? No, he won't. Why? Because he's afraid Lewis Head's friends will kill him or hurt his family. Okay, so Lewis Head is not his stepdad. Now, his mother, Leslie McSpadden, never married Michael's dad. Well, that if you marry the guy, then you don't get as big of a welfare check. So she never married Michael Brown's dad. So Michael Brown never had the opportunity to grow up with a mom and dad in a secure household where they sat down in the evenings for dinner and where Michael Brown was taught right from wrong and where mom and dad sat and read the scriptures with their child and taught them about the living God, taught their child about the living God, that he was loved by God and that he should have a relationship with his creator and that in the next life that he would be judged and that he would have to give an account to the living God. He was never taught that it's a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Because Michael, he didn't even live with his mother and Lewis Head, her latest boyfriend. Michael had to live with his grandmother. And she's quite a colorful story herself. I can assure you that Michael was not getting any scripture readings at her knee either. But Michael had to live with his grandmother because his house, his home was so utterly broken and dysfunctional. His mother was living with a thug. His mother raised him as a thug. And also, Michael Brown smoked a lot of pot, okay? He had enough marijuana in his system at the time that authorities say it probably affected his thinking. And marijuana is known to increase estrogen levels in men, especially in stressful, tense situations. There's clinical data that proves this. And when estrogen levels rise in men, they don't act rationally. They act emotionally. And it seems to me that Michael Brown's end was the perfect storm of a broken life, a criminal act, a genuinely bad attitude, a thug upbringing. And you mix a little marijuana into that, and that's how you end up with this kid just doing something so utterly irrational and inexplicable to an armed police officer. So let me just, one more thing on Ferguson, Missouri. And I know the story is beginning to fade as the next agitation is pursued by the agitators. Now it's New York with the chokehold, right? We've all seen that video. You got four cops around you with guns, and they say, put your hands around your back, and you start slapping at them. You're just obviously out of your mind. Or you want to die. Or you just don't care if you die. You don't slap at a cop's hands when he's trying to arrest you. He might shoot you. Or he might physically. Anyway, the agitators are, I believe, has anyone paid attention to how many high schools, colleges, junior high schools that Barry and his minions have spoken at since he got into office? That seems like all he ever speaks to is college level or lower. And I'm beginning to wonder if at every school he hasn't left a commissar behind. And they've been just developing this angst in the youth. And now the news stories can be ginned up daily because there's always some stupid person who'll do something stupid and get themselves killed by police. And the time seems to have come now to gin up the revolution. And I truly believe that Barack Obama was raised at the knee of his mother and other radicals to believe that revolution is the ultimate good. And Barry thinks that if he can ignite a revolution, he will have fulfilled his destiny in his own warped, twisted, godless worldview. And that it seems like that's what he's doing. I could be overanalyzing it. I could be paranoid. I don't know. But it just seems rather contrived. Going back to Trayvon Martin, now to Ferguson, and now to New York. And I wonder what's next. And it just seems contrived and planned and controlled. And I know that the people Barry grew up with, they loved, the guy who wrote his book. Who was it? Frank Marshall Davis, right? No, Ayers. Yeah, Bill Ayers. That's right. Dreams from my father, my real father, Frank Marshall Davis. Something like that. Or The Audacity of Dope, was it? Yeah, Bill Ayers. He was a terrorist. He bombed buildings. Anyway, just to make my point here about the welfare state and how evil it is. Well, I know that's kind of a bad segue, but I told you about Michael Brown's home life and the racket of the welfare state. And if you've listened for any amount of time, you know that I believe it's the welfare state that's the problem, not immigration, right? That's not unemployment. Unemployment wouldn't be such a problem if people knew that if they didn't work, they wouldn't eat, because they would work, for crying out loud. Well, in the days before the grand jury released its decision, Breitbart reports that the FBI arrested two men who were allegedly looking to buy supplies to make a pipe bomb. Well, the men bought what they believed to be a pipe bomb from undercover police, Brandon Orlando Muhammad Baldwin and Olajuwon Ali Davis. No nexus to Islamic, no way. Anyway, they were arrested in an undercover gun sting and just days before the grand jury decision was released. And as I said, the men had bought what they believed to be a pipe bomb from undercover police, and they were planning to buy more material for more pipe bombs, but they sent a message to the undercover cops saying they wouldn't be able to buy any more until my girlfriend's electronic benefits card was replenished. So the terrorist was using his girlfriend's EBT card to buy pipe bombs. Okay, so there's, I mean, you got nexi all over. You got the Muslim nexus. You got the welfare state nexus. The only thing now, we just need the lawyers to step in, right, with the justice system. That'll just finish it up. By the way, when I was there, I was watching the riots live on TV from my hotel and looking out the window every once in a while. And there was a standoff with a murder suspect in an apartment somewhere in St. Louis. And police had to surround this place. The guy's firing his weapon. And the newspaper, the TV news reporter made sure to be clear that this was just an unrelated armed standoff that had nothing to do with the riots. This is just another night under the proctocracy's justice system here in St. Louis. We got to come back. Cindy, we appreciate it, but just never been a big fan of the keyboard solos. I'm sorry. Okay? I can't do a keyboard solo. It's not acceptable. All right, but we appreciate your help. Really quickly, I got way more stuff than I can possibly do. I've only got a few minutes left. The government in England is about to pay off its debt for the First World War. Yep, they're redeeming a $1.9 billion that was owed from World War I. Yeah. The government said it'll be able to refinance that other debt with new bonds, benefiting from today's very low interest rate environment. So people wonder, how long can the government keep printing money? Well, maybe it just indefinitely. I mean, it's all a confidence game. As long as people are willing to buy the bonds, the government can keep going into debt and it can just go on indefinitely until there's a crisis in confidence. By the way, That was from the IB Times in the UK. Now, CNS News reports that the Daily Treasury statement released last Wednesday revealed that the U.S. Treasury has been forced to issue over $1 trillion in new debt in order to raise money to pay off securities that were maturing and to cover new deficit spending by the proctocracy. So CNS News points out that this mode of financing is defined specifically by the Securities and Exchange Commission as a Ponzi scheme. Yes, the textbook definition of a Ponzi scheme, as published by the Securities and Exchange Commission, says that a Ponzi scheme is an investment fraud that involves the payment of purported returns to existing investors from funds contributed by new investors, which is exactly what the United States Treasury is doing, and as a matter of fact, is exactly what the English are doing to pay off their World War I debt. They're not really paying it off. They're just suckering other people to get in on the Ponzi. So how long can it go on? Well, pretty much indefinitely, depending on confidence, right? It's a confidence play. If you people have confidence, if I have confidence, if the investment banks have confidence, they keep buying the bonds and it just keeps going on. And just a note of etymological interest, confidence. You know that you know what a confidence man is? A confidence man is someone who gains your confidence and then rips you off. And he's called in common parlance a con man. He's a confidence man. It's all about confidence. And right now, well, they've got enough confidence. How long will it last? Well, it could be indefinite. But anyway, bad things can happen as a result. All right. Obama's architect says abortion is a social good. This is from the personhood file. Who is this? Who is this bastard? Gruber. Jonathan Gruber helped write Obamacare. He says abortion is a social good. Well, I'm not surprised. All right. So let's move on from now. So the Centers for Disease Control say that 18% of all American pregnancies end in abortion. But they celebrate the fact that surgical abortion is at a new low. They don't say surgical abortion in this Washington Examiner article. But what's happening is as chemical abortifacients become more prevalent and easier to get, here in Colorado, I think Cory Gardner is going to actually open his own store just to sell the birth control pill, the morning after pill, and Plan B. I think Cory Gardner is actually opening a franchise to do just that. As chemical abortifacients become more available, surgical abortion will decline, and it is declining, but abortion itself is not declining at all. 85% of abortions for the last year recorded, 2011, were due to unintended pregnancy, which means it's a form of birth control for people. 85%, I mean, you can't argue with that. And, of course, they don't count the abortion pills. Now we have reason number 840 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. A former teacher at Horizon Community Learning Center Charter School, it's a good charter school, he was arrested in August on 13 counts of sexual contact with a minor. He pled guilty to 2 counts and was sentenced to 5 years in prison. What did he do? Well, the girl who he molested, she claims she suffered severe emotional distress and even tried to commit suicide after this teacher repeatedly sexually assaulted her. And when she informed him that she had become pregnant, the teacher repeatedly inserted a metal ruler into her body until she began to bleed profusely. He was trying to produce an abortion. And then when you read on, I'll post this up if you want to read this horrible, disgusting story. If you go on to see what happened to this girl in her school and the other school that they transferred her to, because this all became public knowledge. If you read what happened to her, I urge anyone who sends your daughter to a public school to read this article. And you'll be getting her out tomorrow, I hope, Lord willing. Now, from the domestic tranquility file, after confessing to killing Shaniza Forbes, who's a young girl in her 20s, a young man, similarly young man in his 20s, asked the police, do you think I can get some kind of community service? Yeah, he thought the taking of a life equated to a possible community service sentence. This is what's happened to our youth. As they've been miseducated in the government school systems without God and without knowledge of their creator and without an appreciation for the value of human life, their own and others, this is where this particular young man has come. He suffocated his 14-year-old Brooklyn girlfriend. I'm sorry, she's only 14. Because he thought she was pregnant. Then he burned her body and stuffed it in a suitcase. And then he asked if the cops thought he'd get community service. Now, in fact, he faces only 25 years to life behind bars. He should be executed, of course. The girl had told him she was pregnant in a text and told him that she would not get an abortion. And then what he said to her, I can't say it on the air. But he told her, kill the baby. She said no. Investigators found that she was not pregnant when she died. Not that that matters, but it's just another sad irony in a series of horrifyingly sad events in the lives of that girl's family. Into the politics file before we run out of time. A prominent homosexual who has visited the White House more than a half a dozen times over the past 2 years has been charged with child molestation, abusing a 15-year-old boy. His name is Terrence Bean. He's the founder of Human Rights Campaign, probably the most active homosexualist organization in the world. Well, this fella, Terrence Bean, he raised more than $500,000 for Barry's reelection campaign in 2012. He last visited the White House in May when he met with the president, the first lady, and political advisor David Seamus, none of whom have yet reported being molested, at least not yet. Mr. Bean has taken a leave of absence from Human Rights Campaign. His last visit to the White House, listen to this. You want to talk about sick irony. Mr. Bean's last visit with Barry back on May 30th, on that day, Mr. Obama's events calendar said he would hold a meeting of his My Brother's Keeper task force, which was an initiative aimed at establishing mentors for minority boys. And Mr. Bean was right at the front of the line for that one. All right. Let's see here. I don't care. The atheists are going to put up signs in the South. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Oh, Stephen Hawking. Should we end on Stephen Hawking? We probably should. We'll end on Stephen Hawking. Michael Sam, the NFL, he said something this week, but we just don't care. Stephen Hawking, on the other hand, get a load of this. Stephen Hawking has now come out and declared that there is no God. I'm shocked. I didn't know that anyone was waiting for him to declare that there was no God. I thought that it was well established that Stephen Hawking was a fool. Well, you know, it says in the Bible that the fool has said in his heart that there is no God. And Stephen Hawking has long been established, at least in my economy, as one of the greatest fools on the planet. Very smart guy, no doubt. And he's good at math. And he does not smoke. But, you know, he's a fool. Well, he's come out. He said there is no God. He says that the creation, or the universe, was the work of scientifically explainable phenomena and not a supreme being. Hey, Steve, God is a scientifically explainable phenomena, you moron. In fact, you, Stephen Hawking, have spent a good part of your professional career explaining God. You just don't know it or you won't acknowledge it. But that's what your job is, Steve, is to try to figure God out. And he's completely scientifically explainable. Go to Walt Brown's website, check out the book called In the Beginning, and you'll see scientific explanations for so many biblical events that it will shock and astound you. Steve's not going to read Walt Brown's book. No, he's not. Let's see, he was pressed in the interview on the suggestion in his book, his famous book, A Brief History of Time, that a unifying theory of science would help mankind. Here's what Stephen Hawking said in his book. It would help us know the mind of God. What? That's what Stephen said in his book, right? But Hawking says, wait a minute, what I meant by we would know the mind of God is we would know everything that God would know if there were a God, which there isn't. I'm an atheist. Yeah, 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 yeah. Sounds like a third grader. If there were a God, but there isn't. There. Oh, listen to this, though. This is from CNET, which is most of their reporting is on technology and internet, electronics and stuff. Here's what the author of the article says. Wait a minute. Hawking says, religion believes in miracles, but these aren't compatible with science. And then the author says, perhaps, But some look at, for example, the human eye and wonder how that exciting ball of jelly could have come about scientifically. And I'm thinking this guy must listen to Real Science Radio, where Bob Enyart and Fred Williams, they have a challenge out, not to Stephen Hawking, I don't think, but to another one of these big-time atheists, to please give us an algorithm as to how this particular portion of the human eye evolved. And I think it's P.Z. Myers. And P.Z. Myers wrote them back and said, I don't know. So we at least give P.Z. credit for being honest. He doesn't know. And he said he doesn't know. Stephen Hawking, on the other hand, he claims to know. He says there is no God. He's making a positive, affirmative statement that there is no God. That's very risky business, Steve, especially in the shape you're in, for crying out loud. You'd think the guy would have a healthy respect for the fact that he could meet God at any minute. But no. More from Stephen Hawking? Yes. From the science. Really? File. That last story was also from the science. Really? File. I like to do that. Can't believe I forgot to do that. All right, one more story from the science. Really? File. Stephen Hawking told the BBC last week that the development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. That's right. Now, ironically enough, Stephen Hawking, who suffers from Lou Gehrig's disease, is using a brand new system developed by Intel to help him speak, based partially on artificial intelligence. The technology learns how the professor thinks and suggests words he might use next. Yeah, it's kind of ironic. So, but anyway, Stephen says he's worried artificial intelligence could mean the end of human civilization. And I don't know about that, but I know that if artificial intelligence helps keep Stephen Hawking alive and communicating, then at least in that regard, artificial intelligence is harmful. And it's a net loser for civilization. Yeah, all right. And then, Stephen bases his fear of AI on the theory that in technology, things evolve every 18 months by an order of magnitude. And he says our biological evolution is way slower. We can't compete. We'll be superseded by the robots and the computers. As he moves around with his robot and his computer just to go to the bathroom, for crying out loud. Anyway, just kind of ironic. All right, finally. And we are almost out of time. In fact, we're over time. But that's one of the benefits of doing my show when I want, where I want, and saying whatever I want. I can do it for as long as I want. But it's usually about an hour. I'm sorry I've gone a little long. But this is from the Hope for Western Civilization file. Yes, this as reported by Breitbart. At a recent show in Birmingham, England, the bassist for symphonic metal band Delane, one Otto Schimmelpenninck. Yes, Otto Schimmelpenninck, he's the bass player. He stepped in front of a streamer cannon, and it went off. And it hit him in the groin. And he ruptured a testicle mid-concert. And despite nearly bleeding out and eventually losing consciousness, stayed on stage to finish the set. Yep, now he had to go to the doctors. They drained more than 500 milliliters of blood out of, a very tender area. And they stitched him up. He says, he posted on Facebook, he's ready to go for our upcoming European tour. Now, this guy is not French in any respect. No. Otto Schimmelpenninck letting us know that there is indeed still somewhere out there in small pockets hope for Western civilization. Yes, indeed. And mostly it lies with Christian families raising their kids, homeschooling their kids. And it lies in you and I teaching other people that there is a God. It's not them. He is going to judge the world, but he can save them. But you got to look at Mr. Schimmelpenninck, and you've got to draw at least some. He almost bled out, for crying out loud, and he finished the set. That's it, folks. That's the worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Theology Online, AmericanRightToLife.com, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen, here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. And should the Lord tarry, I will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.